What would Vin Diesel do?
No regrets, no fear!
Hello and welcome to episode 117 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
So we have two reviews for you this week. Our hot topic is going to be a short and sweet review of Popstar, and then we're going to jump into our bigger review of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. First up, Popstar. Christy, it's all you.
Popstar, never stop, never stopping. When it becomes clear that his solo album is a failure, a former boy band member does everything in his power to maintain his celebrity status. So this is also known as the Lonely Island movie because it involves the Lonely Island's Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and I'm Jorma waiting for Tacombe. The page to load. Thank you. I was like, and Jorma Tacombe. And in this one, Andy Samberg plays Connor for real, who, as it said, former boy band member. Now he's kind of like a Dustin Bieber douche. And it's basically they're using that kind of behind the music setup where he's left behind his other two bandmates to become, you know, a bigger star, to explore celebrity culture and kind of parody pop music and fold in a ton of celebrity cameos from music and comedy. And I didn't expect to like this because for me, Lonely Island stuff's really hit and miss. I actually really like their stuff they used to do on their website. They did this like OC parody that I thought was called like the Boo or something that I thought was really funny. But then they were on Saturday Night Live and they had a bunch of songs that I thought were fun. So I wasn't really sure how to come into this. I think Popstar works best when the Lonely Island is parodying songs because they really have a good feel for kind of not just how to write a pop song, but also how pop songs are ridiculous. So, like, for instance, there's a part where they kind of make fun of Macklemore where Connor for real sings a song that's supposed to be about gay rights, but the whole time he basically keeps making no homo lines where it's like, I'm super cool with, like, gay people, but I'm totally not cool or I'm totally not gay. And, like, it's this whole awkward thing. And it's just very funny. Like, they're really good about that. There's another, like, another song about calling Mona Lisa a basic bitch. And
my favorite is like, still the one that's the most famous, Humble. That one is my favorite.
Yeah, and it's like those parts are really funny. Where Popstar falls apart for me is as a movie. I'm sorry, we're just recording this so late, and I feel like it's super obvious. Where Popstar falls apart for me is where it's actually a movie because like the characters are so barely shaped that I don't care about them. So really, it's like if you go in just looking for something funny, that's fine. But if you're actually expecting to go on some kind of journey, that's not really going to happen.
I mean, it's basically just a Lonely Island sketch that is stretched to barely feature length. And it actually, given that description, I would have assumed that I would kind of hate it because, you know, like how many SNL movies have we seen that are just like dragged out and padded and we're just totally. Like, oh my God, you should have kept this character as like a 4-minute sketch on SNL. But it works surprisingly well. Like you said, it's very, very slight. It's very, very thin. And like, you know, Connor has an arc and like some of his like his two bandmates have a little bit of an arc, but the characters around them are just kind of there. But it's really funny and entertaining and like, you know, it's what is it, like 80, 90 something minutes? Like,
yeah, it does move fast. Like,
I laughed a lot, and it's a kind of movie where if like a joke doesn't really land, don't worry, there's another one coming like 10 seconds later and maybe that one will land better. There's like a bunch of celebrity cameos. It's kind of like Zoolander that way, but way better than Zoolander 2 was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, point Popstar, never stop, never stopping. And yeah, as you point out, like the music is actually really, really good.
Angie, do you think, because you and I are a little aware of celebrity culture, do you think that someone who doesn't know kind of all the trouble that Justin Bieber gets into in his private life, do you think that they're less likely to respond to the movie?
I feel like even if you don't really follow celebrity culture, like, you know, knowing that a lot of pop stars get into trouble and that Justin Bieber keeps, you know, being on camera for being kind of a jerk and that Macklemore exists, like, these are things that you don't really need to, like, follow celebrity culture closely to understand. Like, you know, these are kind of things that you know just from signing onto the internet in the morning or from passing by a supermarket newsstand. So, I mean, like, I'm sure that if you know a lot about, like, you know, I'm not very into music, so there were a couple of musicians I didn't recognize, and I'm sure that if I did, maybe some of those would have been even funnier. But, like, I feel like the average American probably has more than a good enough grasp of the culture that this is parodying that it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I think that's true. So would you recommend Popstar?
I would if you like The Lonely Island. Like, if you like that kind of, if you like their sense of humor, if you like their music, like, I would watch it. I wouldn't say it's something you need to, like, run out and see, but it's the kind of movie that, you know, I feel like when it's on iTunes, when it's finally on iTunes, I feel like me and my husband are going to end up watching it a little bit buzzed on, like, a Friday, and it's going to be really funny. And then I feel like it's going to be on HBO, and then I'm just going to keep watching it. And I feel like there's a good chance that I will look up some of those tracks on Spotify whenever I just need something to laugh at. So, I mean, yeah, overall, like, I don't think it's amazing, but I think it's really, I think for what it's trying to be, which is basically a feature-length Lonely Island sketch, it's, like, very solid.
I think it's totally silly. I think it comes in and out. And so it's a mediocre movie, but a really fun time.
It's kind of like someone reminded me today that 7 Days in Hell exists, that, like, Andy Samberg movie. And it's kind of like that, where it's like, you know, it's very slight, but it's fun.
I literally have no idea what that is.
It's that, like, tennis sports documentary parody.
Oh, that was on HBO with Kit Harington.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't get around to watching that because tennis.
You should watch it. But yeah, we should move on.
Alrighty, so that is Popstar. Now it's on to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, and I have that one. As Shredder joins forces with mad scientist Baxter Stockman and henchmen Bebop and Rocksteady to take over the world, the Turtles must confront an even greater nemesis, the notorious Krang. So, I enjoyed Turtles. The headline of the review that I wrote for Collider is fun but flawed, and I feel like that's the perfect way to describe this movie. It is fun, silly, entertaining, very much made for kids, but this thing has some pretty major problems. There's a pretty long list of them, but just to start somewhere, one of the biggest problems for me, because it was one of the biggest disappointments, was probably Stephen Amell. Because
we're gonna have a conversation about this.
Really?
I've
been binging Arrow, and I am just infatuated by him. I can watch him do just about anything, and I'm totally cool with it.
So I thought.
He's just. I get a little confused about whether to blame his performance, the script, or the direction, but nothing he's doing in this movie as Casey Jones works whatsoever, and it drove me absolutely insane that even when they were trying to give Casey Jones an emotional moment and make him sad about something, Stephen Amell has this big grin on his face. You should not be smiling. It takes away the value of the line of dialogue you are saying.
Angie, I'm going to let you get to it in a minute, because Angie is having a fit. But I wanted to say, I agree with Perry. For me, the problem with this Casey Jones, I don't have a problem that they wanted to shake up the concept, but they, like, decide to make him, like, a cop who wants to be a detective in this. And, like, the whole thing about Casey Jones that I love from the live-action movies was that where the Turtles had, like, an honor code, he was a dangerous kind of fuck-up, and it made him really fun and dangerous and interesting, and he was, like, New York gritty. And there is nothing about this Casey Jones that applies to any of those things. And kind of most frustratingly of all, he feels way more Canadian than a New Yorker, and he's supposed to be a New Yorker. Like, if they wanted to make him this, like, chipper and polite, just make him Canadian.
I completely agree with that, but disagree. I loved Stephen Amell's Casey Jones. I know this is an unpopular opinion, but you know what? Earlier this year, I fucking liked Batman v Superman, so I'm just burning it down. But, you know, like, you said that you don't have a problem with them shaking up the character, but it honestly sounds like you do, because your problem seems to be that he doesn't resemble the character that you remember from the
franchise. It's like, why call it Casey Jones if all you're going to do is make him wear rollerblades for 10 seconds?
I mean, here I will acknowledge that it's quite possible that one of the reasons I didn't really have a problem with it is because, like, despite the fact that I liked Ninja Turtles a lot as a kid, I weirdly have this blind spot for Casey Jones where I, like, basically I barely remember who he is. I don't know why that was somehow the one thing I missed about the entire Turtles mythology, but I don't really remember that well. So I don't really have that much invested in this movie you know, carrying on the version that we saw on the, like, I really don't care. And I thought I liked this version of Casey Jones. I do agree that it is bullshit that he's a New Yorker. He's so clearly Canadian. It's not like an accent thing. It's just like the whole, like,
it's a personality thing.
He has like the accent. Like, he's like, Stephen Amell is Canadian. And like, I don't know how much of that is coloring like me seeing Casey Jones as Canadian, but he's just, he is a sweet cinnamon roll. And he is like the sweetest, cuddliest, cutest vigilante
I
ever.
Don't
and
want I, my I vigilantes like cupcakes and shit. So that's mad, ridiculous. That's, that makes me so angry.
Like, I realize that, but like, I thought it was darling. And one of the reasons that I think that this version of Casey Jones does work on that level, though, is because, like, you're right. Like, it makes no fucking sense for a vigilante to be that chipper and cute and Canadian. But one of the things that I think this movie does a lot better than the last movie is that this movie knows what it is and who it's aiming for, and it's much more clearly a movie aimed at kids.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I'm not saying, like, oh, things should be dumbed down for kids, or, like, it's okay if stuff is shitty for kids, but I'm kind of saying that, like, I can see, like, to us adults, it's like, it is, like, this character is kind of ridiculous, but I can kind of see that if I was a small kid watching this, I would love this character. Like, I'd be like, he's so cool, and he's so nice, and he's,
what,
like, you know.
Cool, well, before we make this an entire review of Stephen Amell's performance as Casey Jones, speaking to one of the points you just made about why this is so good for kids, but without dumbing it down. A perfect example of that to me is, you know, what the subtitle of the movie is, Out of the Shadows. The movie is about the turtles. Some of them want to come out of the shadows and become a part of society, and some don't. And it explores what that would mean for them as heroes and what it would mean for them as brothers. And it's about, you know, tearing them apart, bringing them back together, figuring out their roles in the group. But the whole reason I bring that up is because I think the movie actually does a really good job exploring that in a way that will resonate with adults but still make sense to kids.
Well, also,
yeah,
I think that
it's very much a kid's movie, but it does feel like, I mean, if you're an adult that likes turtles and you're watching this, I thought it was still fun. I do want to say something, like, so Christy and I did the set visit for this movie, and the title Out of the Shadows is very literal. Like, it is way brighter and daytime way more often in this movie. And during the set visit, they were talking about how one of the reasons that you barely see the turtles and they're always in the dark in the last one is because they didn't have the budget to, like, animate the CG faces. So the title is very literal and very purposeful.
Well, I actually really like that in this one, we get to see a lot more of the turtles and that we get to know them a lot more as individuals, because I felt in the last one, aside from, like, sex pest Michelangelo, we didn't really get a sense of who they were too much. But in this
one... Oh, yeah, this one, no jokes about turtle boners, guys.
Thank God. No turtle boner jokes. And I genuinely like the performance of the guys who played the turtles. I think that they had a great physicality, and I actually, at the press day, they let us see some of the behind-the-scenes footage where you got to see them in the motion capture suits and how that raw footage was translated into a performance of the characters. And that was actually really cool because there's tweaking and stuff. The animators also kind of went with it more. But, like, there's a moment where Michelangelo is defending himself and his brothers and says that they're not monsters. And I actually got really choked up. So, like, every time the turtles are on screen, I'm totally on board. I love this. And another thing I love about Out of the Shadows, and I know Angie's with me, is Bebop and Rocksteady.
Oh, my God! Bebop and Rocksteady are the best thing about this movie.
The two guys in those roles are having such a blast playing those characters.
They are, but the other thing is the characters love, like, they have, like, the most, like, pure and beautiful friendship in this entire movie. Like, I was joking to you guys before the podcast. Like, I want to redo my wedding vows so that I can call my husband, like, the Bebop to my Rocksteady, because that is just the sweetest thing you could say.
This makes me wish you had done the press day, because I got to talk to Stephen Farrelly and Gary Anthony Williams, who play Rocksteady and Bebop. And they are a hoot. Like, they just, it's like, it's not, they're like this. They're just so much fun. If you watch that interview, it's on Screen Rant. I mean, I tried to have questions, but it's really just them riffing. And it was so much fun that I was like, screw it. Who needs questions?
I've done interviews like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like all this stuff, like, Bebop and Rocksteady and the Turtles, to me, feels like why I fell in love with the Turtles when I was a kid, because it was exciting and it was fun and the action was really goofy. But, like, what lets this movie down to me is the humans. Like, I think Casey Jones is a letdown. Mm. And guys, again, like, at least this time they cut April O'Neil to, like, the fringes. But I am still so pissed pissed about what Platinum Dunes did to April O'Neil. Like, when I was a kid, April O'Neil was, like, a strong and smart and brave reporter who was, like, helping the Turtles, and she was very involved, and she was very cool, and she wore a yellow jumpsuit. And, like, look, I'm fine that we don't want to do a yellow jumpsuit. I get that that'd be kind of tacky. But what, there's actually, the like... Megan Fox's big scene in here has like is the thinnest excuse to get her into fetish wear. Like, they concoct an absurdly stupid reason that she has to change into like a Catholic schoolgirl costume, which, for the record, I went to Catholic school. No one fucking dresses like that. So fine, whatever. But anyway, like, it's just so grotesque. Like, her big slow-mo moment is her knotting her stupid shirt like they did in Jurassic World. I can't. It makes me so furious. And like, as much as I love the Turtles and Bebop and Rocksteady, and I wrote this in my review for Comic Book Resources, every time April appears on screen, it feels like a slap in the face. It feels like Platinum Dunes doesn't think that women like the Turtles. It feels like it's all there just for teenage boys to get their rocks off. And like, there's a bigger audience for this movie than that. I find that so insulting.
I'm not going to say that I like this version of April O'Neil, because I most certainly don't, but based on what they established with her and also with Verne Fenwick in the first movie, I think Will Arnett and Megan Fox do, like, a fine job continuing that. But
oh, that's fine. He's funny, but, like, he's
thankfully, this movie isn't really about the human characters. It's about the Turtles, as it should be. But I will say, one human character who is... similar to Bebop and Rocksteady, having a blast and yucking it up big time, is Tyler Perry. Every yes. time he laughed, I laughed.
Yeah, he's a human like cartoon my favorite, character.
But he's
Baxter.
Clearly having so much fun just going over the top of the role that I was like, yeah, let's roll with this. And I feel like I feel that way about so much of the movie, because like, not a lot of this movie makes sense. They all live in, it's very, very cartoonish. Like, not just the way it looks, but like the reality of it. Like, it, like, nothing makes like real world sense, but it makes sense in the way that if you imagine it as an animated thing, you're like, oh yeah, no, now it works. Like,
the one thing they don't really get away with in that respect is how they work in Krang. Because Krang kind of just appears with little to no backstory. I don't even believe they mention the name Dimension X or where he comes from or anything.
They said the word Dimension a few times, but I don't know if they've really said Dimension X.
And introduce the bigger problem with Krang, more than the backstory issue, is the fact that by including him in the movie, they do a major disservice to Shredder, who doesn't even fight the entire film. Shredder does nothing.
Shredder is a very minor character.
He's not the... Well, like, I mean, that's the thing. The last one.
This movie, you feel them working really hard to not cut ties from the first movie, but course correct hard. And so I think in some of those things, you get really great stuff like the Turtles and Bebop and Rocksteady. But in some of those things, you get them going like, well, Shredder wasn't really working and April wasn't really working, so let's shove them to the side. They're still here. We're not going to really deal with them. And let's shove in all this other stuff. So the movie's very uneven in that respect. I mean, I would still recommend it if you're a Turtles fan, because I think it's really fun to see the Turtles in this way. And they are, because of the advances in CGI, a lot more interesting to look at now than they were in like the live action rubber suit days, where the lips just kind of moved regardless. There's a lot of Easter eggs in here, whether or not you like the Turtles cartoon shows or the Turtles movies or the comic book series or even the toys. There's even references to some of the toys we had when we were kids. And I thought all that was really cool, and I think the director, Dave Green, really does care about this franchise. I just don't think Platinum Dunes cares about the female fandom of this franchise. So, I mean, that kind of ruins it for me a bit, because it kind of feels like a big sign reminding me every 10 minutes or so that this movie's not really for me.
I mean, I agree that their treatment of April O'Neil is pretty shitty, because... with Stephen Amell's character, I feel like we've kind of agreed to disagree. I like that version of the character, you don't. April isn't even a version of anything. Like, I have no idea what her personality is or what
I didn't even know she was a journalist in this one until the end of the movie. Like,
she's just Megan Fox.
Yeah.
Like, that's what she is.
She just bats her eyelashes and struts around.
She's less interesting than Megan Fox is as a person, which is, like, alarming, because she's supposed to be playing a character that, you know... is it like, regardless of how you feel about the old version of April O'Neil, she's supposed to be a major-ish character in these. So I agree that like, it's not very good about the way it treats female fans, But so I don't know if it makes it better or worse that Megan Fox's role is so reduced in this, because that really just makes it mostly a sausage fest. But it also makes it easier to forget how shittily it is treating April O'Neil. And, you know, it's sad that I even have to say this, but at least this movie is a lot less like rapey, and a lot like, even with this Catholic schoolgirl outfit scene, it's a lot less like, oh, let's all just drool over Megan Fox. She's hot than the last one was.
Well, because the characters leer at her less, but the audience is still invited to leer at her left and right. I mean, the whole movie she's
mostly
wearing skin tight clothes, no matter
just
what she's
in that
doing.
One Catholic schoolgirl scene, I think. Like, the other ones aren't. The other scenes.
No, every other scene, though, she's wearing jeans that are practically like painted on. It's in like high heels and stuff. Like, she's, you know, she's always dressed. And like, oh, it was so funny because I wrote my review. And then they included, next to my section where I was complaining about April, they included the character poster for this movie, which I hadn't seen. And the character poster is like that pose in like every superhero cover where the woman's back is twisted in this way that women cannot turn their back, so that both of her ass cheeks and like a large part of her boob is visible, so you can stare at both at the same time. And it's just like, that's exactly how this movie treats April O'Neil. It's like she's solely there to be stared at.
So, Christy, it sounds like your biggest problem with this movie is the way it treats female fans and April O'Neil, like, you know, well, so April O'Neil and then female fans by proxy. If they had fixed that character, do you think that you would be, like, unreservedly able to like this film?
Yeah, I do. Because even though I didn't like Casey Jones, I can accept that that's just not a take on the character that I get. But, like I said, like, Casey I wasn't into. April makes me mad. And then especially because, like, they're, like, they had played up the fact that they have Shredder's, like, right-hand woman Karai or whatever. But she's just really kind of glorious eye candy in this, too. Like, not so much to be, like, sexually looked at, but she's just kind of an intimidating threat that's always at his shoulder. And she barely gets to fight.
Laura Linney, like, serves no purpose in the movie as well.
Totally. And
but
it's, like,
Laura
they have
Linney
Laura
does
Linney.
Cry.
But Laura
she
Linney feels
up.
Like a kind of half-hearted recompense of, like, and Laura Linney, and she's like a powerful cop or whatever, but she also feels pretty unessential to the plot.
I yeah. did enjoy watching Laura Linney, this like celebrated actress, trying to like wrap her lips around some of this very hilariously ridiculous dialogue.
I have no transition for this, but before we have to wrap this up, I just wanted to touch on the action a little bit, because I was a little surprised how there's no hand-to-hand combat in this, because that's what the Turtles were all about.
Very true.
But there are two, well, one really good chase scene and one really good shootout scene. I don't want to, I guess it's not a spoiler what they are, because they're featured in the trailer. It's the thing that takes place on the plane.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Then the part that takes place in the river. So those are both incredibly well done. Keep an eye out for those, because they're fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that Dave Green seems to have a really good sense of, like, energy and,
He had it in Earth to Echo, too. Earth to Echo has a very similar feel, just in terms of, you know, like, the energy and the joy he brings to the material he works on.
I agree with that, but I did have a point problem with the action scenes in one point, which is that whenever the action scenes are also supposed to carry, like, a character moment, they tend to flub it. And, like, at the end of one of the action scenes, the Turtles are arguing with each other because they're like, we didn't have good teamwork. And I'm like, they didn't? Like, I didn't get that communicated in the scene at all, but then apparently it's very pivotal. So and that's hard. That's something that, like, the Marvel movies have figured out. And what did I just see? Oh, I'm not allowed to say what I just saw, but a movie I just saw also did this. That's horrible. Sorry. But in this, I just felt like the action was fun, but there's not a lot of character beats in it. So that was something I'd like to see sharpened if they do Turtles 3. But I'd be game for Turtles 3, especially if they recast April.
All right, let's wrap this up. What is your general consensus, Christy? Would you recommend people see it or no?
I would, with caveats. Like, I gave it a rotten on Rotten Tomatoes because I liked, like, half of the movie, but you have to already have an affiliation with the Turtles, I think, to like the movie, even at that level.
Angie?
I feel like maybe it helps if you don't know them that well, because then you have less of a problem with who Casey Jones is in this, for example. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think that if you like the Turtles, it's way better than the last movie, but I don't think it's like essential viewing. It's just like a fun summer movie that you can watch with your family.
Yeah, I'm kind of right in the middle as well. I think it's worth it if you like the Turtles. If not, sit it out. But if you have kids who are into it, like, part of the reason I'm so excited about this movie is because while I was watching it, I could just picture the sheer joy on one of my little cousins' faces.
Agreed.
When I just imagining him watch it. I think it's a really good gateway into the Turtles for really young moviegoers.
It's a gateway drug for Teenage Ninja Turtles.
Oh, boy. You had to do that, didn't you?
I don't hear people say gateway for anything except that.
All right.
Inklings are an actual thing, Christy.
Nope.
Just want to point that out.
I'm internet commenting. Nope.
Disagree. Well, there's a good place to wrap this up. Let's have that be a gateway into our outro. Here we go. You guys know where to find us. We are on iTunes, where it would be great if you could subscribe, comment, and rate. And then we have our website, popcornprosecco.com. You can catch us on Twitter at popcornprosecco. We have our Facebook page, too, where you can like us. And then all three of us are all over the internet, too. Angie, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I am at slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me all over the web, but I collect my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff, and I also write for Collider.com. And I'm so not used to this because my outro has changed since joining the video team, so you can also, I guess, find me on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. That is a wrap on episode 117 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Mona Lisa.